This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Trick or treat! I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio, and we'll have some treats in store for you, but also tell you some scary theocratic tricks we've been dealing with this week.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. Welcome to the October 29th, 2011 broadcast of Free Thought Radio. This is radio for the rest of us, atheists, agnostics, skeptics, secular humanists, non-theists. This show broadcasts from Madison, Wisconsin, and it broadcasts in other places such as Atlanta, in Grand Rapids, in Monterey, and in New York City.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we've told you about this on all our shows. We are a 501c3 educational charity with more than 17,000 members in every state and every Canadian province. We hope you will join us, not someday, but today, and we work to keep religion out of government and to educate the public about non-theism.
This has been a big news week for the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Coming up on today's show, lots of updates on our activism to keep religion out of government.
And then we'll play our treat for you. Will be an excerpt of a very lovely talk by the very talented novelist and philosopher Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein, and we'll be hearing part of her acceptance speech at FFRF's convention at the beginning of October, a few weeks ago in Connecticut. Rebecca Goldstein received our Free Thought Heroine Award, but Dan, I don't know about you, but I did not know when we offered her this award how truly she has earned it, because you'll be hearing the inside scoop on what she overcame to be a celebrated novelist. She's a MacArthur Fellow, a Genius Award honoree. Because she grew up in a very confined situation, a young girl in a very Orthodox Jewish home. So she said being called a heroine, being called a freethinker, these were very meaningful for her. So she gave a very moving, poignant speech, and we'll play some highlights a little later in the show. Before we get to the news updates, Dan, you just got back from what debate?
Another debate. I did debate number 96, public debate moderated in La Crosse, Wisconsin, at the university there, sponsored by the Freethought Society in La Crosse and the Secular Student Campus Group, on should religion and government be strictly separate, with Paul Helseth, who is a Christian PhD out of Minnesota. It was a lively debate, well attended, and actually a couple of people from the audience said some really strange things. One guy came up afterwards and I said, you know, human values are what drive morality. And he said, who cares about human values? It was all about God and his glory. So the audio of that debate should be available in a week or so. We'll put it on our website.
In the next segment, we're going to get to some really big breaking news over a shrine to Jesus that we are protesting on federal grounds in Montana. It's causing quite a hue and cry.
Now, we want to talk about FFRF's work to keep religion out of the public schools. So what's going on, Annie Laurie, Virginia?
Virginia, we have an update. It's kind of a lackluster update on our lawsuit there with the ACLU of Virginia over a Ten Commandments poster in a public school, in a high school there. Actually, it's in the other schools. And there's these weird developments through the Liberty Council, Matthew Staver, trying to out our young complainant. He's a student. And out the parent, so that strategy is so that they, if their names had to be public, they would withdraw from the lawsuit.
So they're using intimidation, basically.
Yeah, it's outrageous, because there's been, there was a walkout of several hundred students at this high school, all wearing Ten Commandments T-shirts, angry people. And this is a very volatile situation, so we think a protective order is very much in order. But then also, they're trying a new strategy, and we have a news clip about that.
It's a collection of historical documents containing the Ten Commandments that hangs in the hallways of Narrows High School in Giles County. A display the school board is being sued over, and now one, according to one board member, they are distancing themselves from. School board member J.B. Gallahan told me over the phone that the board voted only to allow the display to be hung in Giles County schools, but that it did not contribute any public money, nor did they provide any assistance in hanging the display. Attorneys for the board say when they voted to allow the exhibit, they understood that a private citizen would actually hang the display. Liberty Counsel says they filed papers asking for the lawsuit to be dismissed because the fact that any student or parent who might be offended is unrelated to any action taken by the district.
If they were to have had their own decision to display it and hang it themselves, it would still be constitutional. But under the facts of this case, it's even more so constitutional because they have very little involvement in it.
Freedom from Religion, a co-counsel with the ACLU of Virginia representing a student and parent suing the school board, plans to respond officially to a judge in a few weeks.
It has nothing to do with who paid for the display or who physically hung up the display. The school board approved of this, and that's what's being challenged.
And while Liberty Counsel has won federal cases in which a collection of historical documents, including the commandments, were the target of a lawsuit, Freedom from Religion attorneys say in this case, the original fight was over the commandments alone, and that the board simply modified the display. In Giles County, Ken Hynek, WSLS, 10 on your side.
And that was FFRF attorney Patrick Elliott being quoted on the show. And so that case goes on. We'll keep you updated about developments.
It's in federal court, and I should hasten to explain that the Liberty Counsel has cost counties in the South hundreds of thousands of dollars by this strange strategy that if you have a Ten Commandments up, then just put other documents up that actually might be suitable to be framed, then that somehow makes it okay to have the Bible verses up.
It magically makes a religious document secular. Voila!
Or, what they're really trying to do is equate the Ten Commandments with our Constitution, which is outrageous.
Now, Annie Laurie, last Sunday you were on Fox News for about 5 minutes, and
it was national news, and we had a problem with that. Our TiVo.
So we'll play that. But what was that? That was the Florida complaint we were doing?
We have a big complaint going on in Clay County, Florida. And it's a very bizarre complaint where a principal, his name is Davis, sent home, he has a newsletter and he sent it to staff, but a parent got hold of it. So I think it's generally circulating, in which he advertises a weekly session of prayer on the flagpole at an elementary school.
The flagpole on school property.
Yes. Now, this is some once-a-year event at high schools that clergy have come up with, but it's student-led, it's before school. Not much we can do about it unless the school is promoting it. But in this case, it's a weekly devotional just as the little children, ages 5 and up, are arriving on school grounds. And these are pastors, these are even teachers, they're the congregation members being prayed at as the little kids are walking to school. And he, in the newsletter, he said, he quoted a pastor saying that the First Amendment only applies to Christians, that we need to get God.
I mean, religious liberty. It was for only
Christians. Yeah, this country's only for Christians.
Yeah. Wow.
And that God and prayer need, and Jesus needs to be back in our public schools. And, I question whether this person should actually have this job. And there is some coverage. There's a lot of coverage. There's all kinds of TV and news coverage there about this, and so we can listen to one station.
Every Monday, Pastor Ron Baker leads prayer around the flagpole at Clay Hill Elementary.
I'm not violating anything.
It's not just Clay Hill Elementary. Baker leads a prayer group at three other Clay County schools once a week.
There is no school board policy against it. We're well within the parameters.
Baker, pastor of Russell Baptist, says he has prayed around the flagpole for 12 years without a problem. Until now.
I think in this area, God and country run deep.
It became a controversy after September 30th when Clay Hill Elementary principal Larry Davis sent this letter to his staff. It includes an article encouraging prayer around the flagpole and quotes another pastor which states the First Amendment was for Christianity, not other religions. Even Pastor Baker says the quote does not support his position.
That's not my belief, no.
But the Freedom From Religion Foundation received a complaint from a parent.
We're shocked.
On October 11th, the foundation wrote Clay School Superintendent urging him to cease all school involvement with and promotion of these events. Annie Lowry Gaylor is co-president of the Wisconsin Secular Rights Organization. I spoke with her by phone.
It really calls into question the judgment and professionalism of this principal.
Gaylor says prayer at the flagpole violates the Establishment Clause.
The Gideons are not allowed on school property to pass out Bibles. I don't see how a pastor can come into school property and pray.
Clay Hill Elementary Principal Larry Davis had no comment. Pastor Baker says he's not breaking any school board rules and will be at the flagpole Monday morning for weekly prayer.
For me to stop would, in my mind, say, okay, I agree, it must be wrong. Well, I don't. I don't agree to that. So I honestly don't see how I could stop.
Well, maybe when he gets a decision from a court, then he will have to stop.
I'm Annie Laura Gaylor with Dan Barker. Excuse me. We'll be right back with our big complaint in Montana about a Jesus shrine on federal property.
And then we'll also talk with, we'll hear a speech from Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein.
Hi, my name is V Tran. I'm from Chicago, Illinois, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we're back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. You can find more about FFRF at our website, FFRF.org. You can join us, support us, become active, and help us in our non-crusades.
Now, I've been traveling around giving talks in California and other places, campuses, and I got back this week and saw that our legal team's been really busy on a lot of issues, including I got a phone call from a really angry woman in Montana, just about screaming my ears off about a cross. So, Annie Laurie, tell us about
not
this.
Not a cross, Dan. You have been gone too long.
I know, a big Jesus statue. Excuse me, yeah.
Yeah. At the end of May, our attorney, Stephanie Smith, had contacted the U.S. Forest Service asking a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act, but also telling them, gee, you've got what appears to be a shrine to Jesus on federal property, and that's against the Constitution. And they sent us a response that was sort of promising at the end of June, but we weren't quite sure what was going on. And then press reports started coming out that the Forest Service had indeed not renewed an unconstitutional lease with the Knights of Columbus, which is a Roman Catholic men's club, to permit a Catholic shrine on federal property. It's on the top of a mountain.
Montana?
Yeah, and it's called Whitefish Mountain or Big Mountain, and it's owned by all of us. It's federal property. And then a member of Congress, a Republican Representative Denny Rehberg, got into the act and made a big fuss and is playing political football with this. And so,
isn't it a huge, really, really tall thing? Like,
no, it's not huge, but it's cement. It comes from a mold. It's one of many, many lookalike Jesus statues that you can see on Knights of Columbus property.
Also, it's like a human size, a little bigger.
A little bit bigger.
Okay.
And then they sometimes put it on a pedestal, make it look bigger.
Yeah.
And when the Republican member of Congress got into the act, what happened is the forest supervisor there in Montana, Chip Weber is his name, capitulated. And he announced last week that Flathead National Forest was withdrawing its decision not to renew the permit and would formally seek public comment, which makes no sense because you don't vote on whether to uphold the Constitution. It doesn't matter. This is obviously to stall and to inflame and encourage people to fuss about it. And so we have written a very formal complaint to the chief of the U.S. Forest Service, saying, come on, get with it.
Okay, but this woman that called me said that it's a war memorial, right? Is it a war memorial or what?
No. The special use permit that the Knights of Columbus got in the 50s records it as to provide a site for a religious shrine. And the map is titled Knights of Columbus Shrine, and there's even a tab pointing to it that's marked shrine, and this is a sort of sham claim that it's a war memorial because the Knights of Columbus that put it up say that they had in mind some of the men from their local Kalispell group who fought in the war and liked the Jesus statues they happened to see in the Alps. So anyway, and of course, you can't have a religious war memorial because that excludes Jews and non-Christians and the many atheists in foxholes who fought valiantly during World War II for our country.
So there's some clips about this story?
So we do have several clips. The best one we don't have, but this is a Fox News segment with Denny Rayberg, where I was told that he would not allow me to be interviewed on the show. I had to send a written statement. So here it is.
It has been a part of a World War II memorial for nearly 60 years, but the statue of Jesus right there may soon be removed because one group says it violates the separation between church and state.
Montana Congressman Denny Rayberg is fighting for the statue to stay put, and he joins us now live from Washington, D.C. Good morning to you, Congressman.
Good morning.
So I'm looking at the history of this statue. I guess it hasn't been a problem for, what, 60 years? It was put up in 1953, and lo and behold, the people who put it up got one of those permits. They've renewed it every 10 years. So what's the problem?
It's 25 by 25 feet. It's not a problem. We have one group in Wisconsin by the name of Freedom from Religion that thinks there's a hint of some kind of a religious aspect. What it really is, it's a testament to our World War II veterans, and we're outraged. We need a lot of help. The Forest Service has backed off. They suggest that they are willing to reconsider the issue, so that we need people from all over the nation to say enough is enough. Let us honor our World War II veterans. It's been there since 1953. Let it stay.
Sure. Am I to understand this is heading to court right now?
Well, no, they backed off. The Forest Service was not going to renew the lease, and so they said, we will take comments from the public, and that's why we're putting out the national call. We set up a website called veteransjesus.com. We hope people from all over the country will write or call or do whatever's necessary, and the Forest Service does listen to comments, so we're in the comment phase at this time.
So here's the statement from the group who wants it to come down, Freedom From Religion Foundation, a Catholic shrine is not an appropriate memorial to all U.S. veterans, such as Jews and the many atheists in foxholes who bravely fought in World War II. This religious monument, rather, would send a message of exclusion and of impermissible governmental preference for Christian veterans, and in particular, Catholic veterans.
It's on a ski run. It's 25 by 25, and it's just because it's maintained and was put up by the Knights of Columbus does not make it a religious statement.
This is a shrine of Jesus. It's a statue of Jesus. So we do have some opinions, local opinions in Montana that are pretty funny.
Tensions are running high in the Flathead Valley after word spread that the U.S. Forest Service would possibly force the removal of a statue of Jesus Christ on Big Mountain. An atheist group based out of Madison, Wisconsin, pushed the issue after one of their members who lives in the Flathead Valley complained about the statue. The Forest Service has since softened their stance and is now suggesting a public comment period for the statue. Today, we posed our own public comment session in Kalispell.
First of all, I don't think they know what they're getting themselves into with the bullheaded Flathead Valley, so I think they're in trouble.
In all honesty, I understand where they're coming from, but they don't live here, and I don't think it's any of their business.
They need to leave that thing alone. It's a national monument. It should stay where it's safe, because people like me go up there, look at it, and it's beautiful. Who do they think the Forest Service thinks they are taking that down?
We believe that the statue's all right there, should be there. People love it. People use it. I mean, I don't think that anyone from another state should be able to dictate how we live in our state.
The Forest Service is now deciding when to hold a public comment period on what is to be done with the 6-year-old statue.
Now, we don't have time to read all of the crank mail that we've received, but you can go to our news link at ffrf.org news and look for our press release. We want you to get involved. We want you to chime in and say, no, Jesus does not belong on public land.
I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned. On the second half of Free Thought Radio, we'll be talking with the philosopher and author, Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein. This show won't be as scary. That part won't be as scary as the first part of the show, but she has some interesting, somewhat frightening things to say about how she was raised. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney. In my new play, Letting Go of God, I come out clearly as an atheist, absolutely committed to keeping church and state separate. Won't you join me and the Freedom From Religion Foundation in waking up America to the growing dangers of theocracy? Phone 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. That's ffrf.org.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. And we had a really fun and interesting convention on October 7th and 8th in Hartford, Connecticut. And on Friday night, October the 7th, we had a power couple there. Steven Pinker, the scientist and author, and his wife, Rebecca Neuberger-Goldstein, both spoke to us on the same evening. And Rebecca Neuberger-Goldstein received from the Freedom From Religion Foundation the Free Thought Heroine Award. And then she told us a number of things about her life, which we had not known. Her speech was about 45 minutes, but we're going to listen to roughly half.
Yeah, and before we bring that on, we want to advertise her novel.
Well, she mentions it in the speech.
She has 36 arguments for the existence of God. Excuse me, 36 arguments for the existence of God, a work of fiction. And she's written many novels. She's written a book about Spinoza. She's a philosopher. She's
MacArthur Fellow. The history of science and the history of math and the philosophy of science and the philosophy of math. So this is a part of Rebecca Neuberger-Goldstein's speech at our convention.
My birth family is very religious. It is Orthodox Jewish. I come on my paternal side from a very long line, 12 generations of rabbis and of rabbis' wives. Never want to forget the rabbis' wives. And I like to think that maybe there were some free thought heroines among them. My father, who was from Poland, had rabbinical ordination, but he was too self-conscious about his accent to sermonize for American worshipers and general lacked confidence. And so he became a cantor instead, as a result of which he could barely support his family. We were as poor as synagogue mice. We were four children, three daughters. I was inauspiciously positioned in the middle of those three girls. And the oldest was a boy. There were high intellectual expectations placed on my brother, who was expected to carry on the family tradition of producing Talmudic scholars. My brother, by the way, is a rabbi. I was a girl, and as a girl, there were no expectations for me other than I'd be sweet and docile, unassuming, and modest. Modesty is the premier virtue indoctrinated into an Orthodox woman. I'd gone to an all-girls school in Manhattan, an extreme all-girls school, by which I mean extremely backwards. It was a whole collection of schools that were first established about 100 years ago. They were called Beis Yaakov schools, if that means anything to you. And they were considered, when they were first established, radically progressive, since although Orthodox, they instructed girls in some of the sacred texts. And this was very, very radical. One medieval sage, in fact, had written that it would be better that the holy books be burned than that girls ever study from them. So this was a quite radical position. We didn't, of course, study the Talmud, which is the intellectual zenith in Orthodox Judaism. It's the men folk's highest pride, the very means of conferring status among them, so that the best in Talmud are simply the best simplicitor. In fact, this is the standard used even in arranging marriages, which came as a great surprise when Steve witnessed this in my family. A brilliant Talmudic scholar, no matter what his other failings, can get a very desirable bride, most beautiful, richest, whatever it is that he desires. And I have sometimes, especially when I was younger, would play in my mind with the counterfactual, what would it have been like if I had been born a boy? And I know that I might have become immersed in the world of Talmudic scholarship, which happens to be a world of intellectual ethereality, demanding originality and deftness in splitting a hair at least 20 ways, which is, I confess, just the sort of intellectual exercise that I've often enjoyed as an analytic philosopher. I think I would have made rather a good Talmudic scholar. But there was, of course, no Talmud for us girls. Female modesty, on the other hand, was stressed to such an extent that in my high school, instead of having pop quizzes, we used to have pop hemline inspections. But this was only the external modesty, inducing body shame, of course. Far more invidious was the internal inculcation of female modesty, which meant doing nothing to attract undue attention to oneself, including in one's very speech. There is a Talmudic prohibition against a woman's voice. This prohibition is known by the name Kol Isha, the voice of a woman. Men outside her family can't hear her voice because it is in itself, the Talmud says, an instrument of seduction. The law has been interpreted by almost all scholars to cover only the singing voice of women. Since, you know, my father was a cantor, we were all musical, and my older sister in particular had a voice, I think, that would have made her known in the greater world had she not been born a Orthodox female. It was, in fact, such an extraordinary voice that she was actually given voice lessons by my parents. And when her teacher heard her sing, she said, "I have very little to teach Minda. God taught her how to sing." But that voice, which was professionally trained, was never heard outside our house or outside her own household when she got married and she would sing lullabies to her children. But there is a Talmudic discussion as to whether Kol Isha extends even to a woman's speaking voice. I quote here from the Journal of Halakha. Halakha means Jewish law. "Perusal of the Talmudic sources thus establishes the undisputed principle that a woman's voice is ervu." Ervu means an instrument of sexual incitement. I continue with the quote, "but leaves unclear whether a speaking or a singing voice is intended. And in fact, some authorities do ban even the speaking voice of a woman," unquote. To come from a background like that, in which such questions are even debated, even if the more liberal interpretation, which prohibits only a woman's singing voice, is accepted, is to have a very special set of problems in attaining one's personal freedom from religion. Imagine, if you can, how difficult it is for me to speak up. The special hurdle of convincing myself to overcome the embarrassment of undue attention. Whether it's in the fray of philosophical combat and philosophy happens to be one of the most combative academic fields, or before an audience such as this one. And then, of course, I'm a writer, and writers are supposed to be engaged as least as much as in writing as in self-promotion. And this is a difficult thing in the life that I've chosen for myself. This was my nurturance, and it was intensified in that high school, that abominable high school that I went to. It was, however, an accredited school. Not all of these religious schools are, but it did have accreditation from New York State, which meant, and I have to say hallelujah, it meant that we were required to take the New York State Regents exam. I am so grateful for that. Because it meant that there was some control over the secular curriculum. I really consider those religious schools which don't have accreditation, and there are a slew of them, to be a form of child abuse.
We will come back to hear a little bit more of Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein, the author. Well, she's going to talk about 36 arguments against the existence of God. You're hearing another woman's voice. I am Annie Laurie Gaylor. That's Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein, overcoming her religious indoctrination. I'm here with Dan Barker, and this is Free Thought Radio, and we'll be right back.
Oh, hi. My name's Walt, and I'm from just east of Buffalo, New York. I'm on Free Thought Radio. Isn't that great?
And we're back with Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we're listening to highlights of Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein's speech to the recent FFRF convention. She is the author of, well, she's speaking about 36 arguments against the existence of God.
In 10th grade, when I took biology, our rabbi principal came in very seriously and spoke to us on the first day of class to warn us that the teacher was required to teach us the theory of evolution because it was going to be on the Regents exam, but it was only a theory, which means unproved. And since it contradicted the story of creation that we all knew was true, we should learn the theory for our tests and then we should forget all about it. But, of course, the explanatory elegance and power offered by that theory, as well as the explanatory elegance and power of the atomic theory of underlying chemical reactions that I learned in my chemistry class, in contrast to the explanatory vacuity, the just emptiness of such things as I learned most of the day in what we called our Limude Kodesh, our holy classes, meant that I forgot nothing of what I learned about evolution or chemistry, but I forgot almost every bit of convoluted nonsense I learned in my holy classes just as soon as I had taken the test. We were actively discouraged from going on to college, especially those among us who were considered the best students. But instead, we were urged to go to a seminary that was connected with the high school and was a sort of way station to bide our time until the all-important event in our lives, which would be getting married. But I did go to college. Eventually, I transferred to Barnard, which is the place I think of where I was born into consciousness. And it was, for me, the first time I experienced what it was like to have my nature nurtured. I could study anything I wanted, even the subjects considered mostly for boys, which was math and physics. I have to say I was a little disappointed that that category, things that were considered mostly for boys, existed even outside of that insular world that I was trying so hard to escape from. But at least I could study those subjects. Nobody was going to burn the books before I got to study them. And then, of course, there was philosophy. which I got into because I was interested in philosophy of science and philosophy of math. I was learning very strange and baffling things in my physics classes, especially quantum mechanics, and I wanted to understand what these theories meant to be sane about the world that we live in, about reality. I was also interested in questions about foundations of mathematics. Mathematics is so different from all other knowledge. You know, it's a priori. We can prove things conclusively. It's immune to empirical revision. And this was both wondrous to me, but surprising what was going on here. And the more I bothered my professors about this, the more they said, why don't you go ask the philosophers about this? So I went to the philosophers, and I found something in philosophy. I found a lot. Because it was while I was studying philosophy that I came to understand, and I have to say, for me, this had the feel of salvation, that it is no sign of moral or spiritual strength to believe that for which one has no evidence. Neither a priori evidence, as in math, nor a posteriori evidence, as in science. It's a violation, almost immoral in its transgressiveness, to shirk the responsibilities of rationality, the obligations that are placed on us by being propositional creatures, able to formulate truth-valued propositions, to consider them, to reflect on them, to assert them or deny them, and then to act on our considered beliefs when those beliefs are such as to support actions. Bertrand Russell, who is one of my heroes, said about the practice of postulating in mathematics, quote, "The method of postulating what we want has many advantages. They are the same as the advantages of theft over honest toil." And one can very easily adapt Russell's statement about postulating in mathematics, and one I know that he wouldn't mind, uncompromising atheist that he was, so that it describes not what's so wrong postulating in mathematics, but what's so wrong about an epistemology that sacralizes faith. So, to paraphrase Russell, the practice of believing on faith, what we want, has many advantages. They are the same as the advantages of theft over honest toil. My last book was called 36 Arguments for the Existence of God, a Work of Fiction. And of course, that subtitle was very important. And when I was on my book tour, and they would announce, in various places that I went, the title of this book, they would often leave off that subtitle. So it was just 36 Arguments for the Existence of God. And I would often have very enraged audiences. I mean, they thought I was going to be, you know, delivering a rejoinder to Dawkins and Hitchens. And I actually had interesting discussions with the audience. And there was one woman in particular, and it was in Philadelphia, in the Free Library of Philadelphia. And she said to me, she's listening. She said, "Are you actually saying that you're an atheist? Why would you just come out and say something so terrible about yourself?" You know, and as if, it was as if, of course, I had just said that I eat babies, as one woman said. I think this is very important to think. If we really want to give the full authority to reason, then when we have to take into account the work that philosophers have done as well, not just as important as they are, and as important as I've always felt them to be, the empirical sciences. More has been established in the world of values than we give secularism credit for. For example, it's a fact that slavery is wrong. It's a fact, despite the fact that no religion was able on its own, without the input of secular philosophical arguments, to discover that fact. It's a fact that slavery is wrong, despite the many laws concerning the keeping of slaves that are to be found in the books of Leviticus and Deuteronomy. just as it's a fact that the voice of a woman, whether speaking or singing, is not to be regarded as in itself a sexual incitement. And if it is so regarded, that's not the moral problem of the woman who's speaking.
That's some highlights.
It is, of course, the problem of the men who hear it. I thank you very much for listening to this woman's voice.
That's some highlights of Rebecca Neuberger-Goldstein's speech to the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Are we going to reprint the speech?
The entire speech will be reprinted. The entire audio will go up. And, you know, we didn't go into her really spectacular academic credentials. She's come so far.
Yes, and following her husband, Steven Pinker, talking about his new book, which we will play a little bit excerpts of his speech as well. So this is Halloween weekend, and so I hope you were scared enough. But a couple days later is the birthday of a very famous female freethinker whose voice has been heard a lot. Her name is Annie Laurie Gaylor. And if you hear that music in the background, that music is Annie Laurie. So happy birthday, Annie.
On November the 2nd.
Happy birthday. Thank you. And we also want to thank our engineer and producer, Dave McCann, for doing the show for us. And this show is produced in Madison, Wisconsin. Go to ffrf.org/radio for details.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Tune in next week for more blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.